VIP is a boutique education advisory that helps aspiring students get accepted into top-tier education institutions globally for high school, undergraduate, master's, MBA, and extended education programs.
Good evening, everyone. We're really happy that you could join us here at VIP for a master class, which is a new initiative we have started to bring you subject matter experts who are going to talk about their area of expertise and passion. Today we have a very special guest with us, Professor Chandler. Professor Chandler has a PhD in English from Cornell University. She's done her BA from the University of Rochester with a major in English and a minor in Latin and Buddhist studies. Professor Chandler is an assistant professor of sexuality, women's and gender studies at Amherst College and has published 3 books in several languages. Her research and teaching interests include post-colonial literature, and theory, feminist theory, South Asian literature, and of course cinema, which is our topic for today. Today's masterclass will give you an overview of Indian cinema from the 1930s to the present. We will examine key changes in the industry, such as the success of Sholay and the liberalization of the Indian economy. We will also briefly examine the parallel art cinema movement, focusing on the films of Satyajit Ray and Aparna Sen. At the end of the seminar, we will have time for some questions and answers. Thank you all for sending us those questions. We'll be addressing those after the lecture Professor Chandler will conduct. And we really hope this is that you enjoyed the seminar, and because VIP's endeavor to provide knowledge sessions and incremental knowledge to increase your teacher space. So without much ado, I will now hand it over to Professor Chandler to take you through the world of Indian cinema.
Thank you, Ms. Kazi. So today's lecture is going to focus mainly on Indian cinema. Now, South Asia as a subcontinent has many cinematic traditions, and some of you may know them. In Pakistan, we have Lollywood, and that's a film industry based in Lahore, and so on. And Sri Lanka has its own film industry, so does Nepal. But India stands as the largest film industry in the region. And it's not only in the region, it's actually in the world. So in 2012, India produced 1,602 films. That is a lot of films. And it has twice the number of films produced than Hollywood. So it is the largest film industry in the world, followed by Nollywood, which is the Nigerian film industry. And then comes Hollywood. So we're first in that. So today's lecture is going to mainly focus on 2 aspects of Indian cinema. One is mainstream Indian cinema, which a lot of you may be familiar with, and the other is parallel cinema. And so the lecture is going to be divided into 2 halves. So I'm going to focus first on mainstream cinema. So when we speak of mainstream cinema, you might think, oh, Bollywood. But that's not all that Indian mainstream cinema is. In fact, India has many, many, many different language cinemas. And so what we think now of as regional language cinema is actually a big part of the film industry. So for instance, we have Bengali films, Tamil films, Bhojpuri films, Telugu films, and each of those films has its own star system, its own circuits, of production and distribution. And so what we have is a huge film industry. But today I'm going to focus mainly on Bollywood, perhaps because that is the most interesting aspect of this view, and also very significantly it is the highest grossing film industry within India, right? So a lot of the money and the revenue that we get comes from Bollywood. Now the name Bollywood, how did that name come about and why are we still using that name? So the name it's interesting because it started out as talking about the film industry because it was based in Bombay at that point of time. City we now call Mumbai was Bombay, still call it Bombay. And the name was disliked. It's disliked by the film industry because it's seen as an insult, perhaps, that Bollywood is not a pale imitation of Hollywood. In fact, it's very, very different from Hollywood, and we're going to be talking quite a bit about that. And Bollywood films, as you know, are made in Hindi, and they are primarily what we would call commercial narrative cinema. So what does commercial narrative cinema mean? It means that the story, that the film has a plot. There's a beginning, middle, and end, and that it is mainly produced for entertainment purposes, right? And to make money. It's not, it doesn't have social aims. It's not there to change society, though it can do that, of course. But primarily the aim is to make money, right? It's a for-profit industry. And so a large part of this, what we call Bollywood, is characterized by three interruptions. Now, these interruptions are a part of film theory. So there's a very famous film theorist, Lalita Gopalan, and she has said that one way of recognizing Bollywood as its own kind of cinema and its own style has to do with how we see its interruptions. So the three interruptions are the intervals, right? So you're watching a film, in the middle of the film, if there's a break. And usually that break happens at some exciting moment and you want to know what happened next. Now, the interval, it was actually designed, one of the reasons for it was because Bollywood films are really long. Some of them are 2.5 hours or 3 hours. And you may want to use the bathroom, you may want to have a sip of water. So that's why that was instated as a break in the duration of the film, right? And what started out as a necessity then became an integral part of the plot, right? So when film writers actually creating scripts, they think, okay, when should we have the interval? Interval has to be at an exciting climactic moment, so we bring the audience back into the theater, right? To have the interval at a moment where like everyone's happy and nothing is going on in the story, no one's going to care. But you want to have it at a moment where everyone's going to be like, oh my God, I can't wait to know what happened next. What did she do? Did he leave her? Etc. So that's the first of the interruptions. The second interruption is what we call the song and dance sequence, right? So these are all the songs that come up and you listen to them on the radio and you get them on CD. And the song and dance interruption actually is a really unique and essential part of the cinema. So how did this come about, right? Why do Bollywood films have song and dance? And sometimes they're like, oh my God, when will the song end? Why is it going on for so long? It's really boring. But there's a reason for this, right? One of the reasons is it has to do with the history of Bollywood cinema. So Indian cinema, as we know it, actually originated from Parsi theater. And that theater tradition was very invested in songs and dances, right? Because imagine this. There's no TV, there's no radio, there's no internet, there's nothing. There is a bit of radio, but not everybody has a radio, right? So you go out in the evening with your family and you want to watch something and you want the entire family to be entertained. So you go to the theater, right? At that point of time, that's what we have. And you're watching a show and the kids are getting very bored because they don't understand what's going on. So for them, you have a little song and dance number, the kids are entertained, then they fall asleep, then you have the rest of it, then they wake up again, there's another song and dance number, right? So that's why the song and dance number was instituted within theater to keep large amounts of different kinds of audiences happy, right? And then when theater started being filmed and it became the first film, though I will talk about that in a minute, about the history of Indian cinema and what we now know of it, its origins are in Parsi theater. The song and dance continues, right? And that's why we continue to have song and dance sequences. And at this point of time, they're not just irrelevant. So there are some films without songs and dances. Maybe you remember the film Korn, Ram Gopal Verma. It didn't have any songs and dances. But mainly, filmmakers are very, very keen to have the songs and dances because they increase revenue. Before the film is released, you can make money on the song, you have MP3s, you can sell MP3s, you can sell ringtones, you can do all the rest of that, right? So it's very important. And then you show little clips of them on TV, and then everyone's really excited, they hum the song and they want to watch the film. Yeah? So that's the commercial purpose now of song and dance sequences. And now we come to the third interruption, which you might not even think of as an interruption, and when you're watching the film, it doesn't even occur to you that it's an interruption, but it is. And that interruption is censorship. So you might remember, if any of you have watched old films, that any time the hero and heroine, they're singing in a garden, and they want to show a kissing scene, what happens then? We show the two of them coming closer and closer and closer to each other, and then there's a cut, and immediately you see two flowers or two bees kissing each other. Now, what happened over there? Why did this suddenly cut from that to the two flowers, right? From the two people to the two flowers. And that is because it was not considered decent to show people kissing on stage, right? And that's only changed recently. And I'll talk a little bit about that and why that changed. But for the longest time, you couldn't show an on-screen kiss. Yeah? And so what the flowers and the waterfall and the bees did is was to defer the pleasure. So you have the pleasure, you have the sense that something exciting and erotic is going to happen, but you don't see it. It's left to your imagination. And the bees and the flowers are kind of a simulation of that, right? So that's where censorship came in, to enhance the pleasure. In a sense, what the film directors did was they said, okay, we cannot show an on-screen kiss because the censor board is going to cut it out. And instead, we have these little flowers. And it's not like the pleasure is not going to be there. It's just going to be deferred. Yes? So I hope that is a concept that everyone understands. So that's censorship. And now, of course, censorship is used in many instances to curtail what we can and cannot see on screen. So we do have on-screen kissing, but maybe no scenes of sex. Yeah? So I will talk a little bit more about how censorship has changed and how it's changed the film industry and has a lot to do with the liberalization of the Indian economy, but that will come in a bit. So one of the other things I want to talk about before I get into the history of our cinema is the role of genre. So some of you might know, oh, Hollywood films, there are thrillers, there are murder mysteries, there are romances, there are what we call the rom-com. But why doesn't Indian cinema have any genres, right? And that has very much to do with how the cinema was conceived and constructed, right? So what we have is the masala film. And in this masala film, we have everything. Remember now I spoke to you about the Parsi theater. And so if you remember that, there was a little bit of everything for somebody, right? And so similarly, that idea continued on into Indian cinema. So now, if you see films of the 40s to the 70s, you have very much films that have a little comedy sequence, a fight sequence, a song and dance, a little romance, and a little bit of everything, right? And that was to entertain the masses, and that's why they were called what we call masala film, right? A mix of everything, some garam masala, some mirch masala, some turmeric, yes, to make what we have is a delicious film. So that's why for the longest time, Bollywood cinema did not have any genres. And now, actually recently, there have been genres, and I will be talking about this when we go to the history, just to tell you a little bit about some questions, some of the more formal elements of the cinema. So now let's get into the history of the cinema, and how did it start, and who were the first people, and how did this become such a big film industry? How did this become one of the mainstays of Indian popular culture, right? And the first film, actually, there were some Parsi dramas that were films, but I'm not going to call them the first film because they did not have any of the editing techniques or camera techniques. It was basically camera put on one side of the stage, filming everything, and that was that. And there wasn't any attempts like, oh, let's get these different camera angles. How about this close-up? How about this? No, it was just like, let's put a theater in this, let's put a camera in the theater and film the play. So what we call as the first film was actually Dadasaheb Phalke, who is known as the father of Indian cinema. And his film was Raja Harishchandra in 1930. Now, this was a silent film. And you might think that all films come with people talking and dancing and all the rest of that, but that wasn't the case. So the technology at that point of time was not advanced enough for people to actually be talking and for that to be recorded in the video, right? So people just, a silent film, you watched everything, and maybe there would be some music, live musicians there playing some music to accompany some of the scenes, right? Depending on which theater you went to. So the first talking film, what we know as talkies, right? You might go around Bombay and say, oh, these are talkies and this talkies. And what does talkies mean? It means films where there's sound, where you can hear things, where people are talking, right? So the first talkie was Alam Ara, 1931. So like Raja Harishchandra, Alam Ara is also a historical film. And why is that, right? Another famous film of the time is Sant Tukaram. And all of these are very historical, and they dwell on like either historical figures or periods or wars or something that happened. And why was that? It was because that was considered to be both educational and entertainment, right? So people might want to know, oh, what happened then? Like, what was this scene saying and what happened then? and how did this great saint live, right? So it had that kind of purpose, and it was wildly popular. You might think right now, oh my God, who is going to watch a boring film on some saints, right? But at that point of time, that was the only entertainment. So everybody flocked to these theaters and watched these films, whether they were about the Mughal Empire or about Sant Tukaram, right? And so there was a big change in the 40s, and that had to do with the development of IPTA. So some of you might already know this. It's the Indian People's Theater Association, and they are credited with actually bringing about a huge change in the film industry. So several of these people involved in IPTA then became film directors. So you might know some of them actually, Guru Dutt and Mehboob Khan. So Guru Dutt, very, 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 very famous film, Siyasa, and of course Mehboob Khan's Mother India. And both of these people came from IPTA. Yeah? And in the Indian People's Theatre Association was not only restricted to Hindi. So a lot of these theatre directors actually came from Bengal. Yeah? Guru Dutt, as you know, is Bengali, and he started out his career in theatre over there. And what they came is, they came to Bombay to make these films. And they saw films as an extension of theatre, in a sense, as an extension of their theatre practice. And so a lot of these films were very, very moving, and a lot of them had important social themes, right? So they talked about the injustices meted out to the peasants. So you see Mother India, I'm sure all of you have seen it. She doesn't have anybody to plow the field. Her husband has left her. She has two hungry children, and then she takes the plow, and she plows the land, and she creates the crop, and she feeds her children, and she becomes the mother of the nation, right? So in a sense, these films were very invested in trying to think about a way to conceptualize the Indian nation. Now, you have to remember that this is the period of British rule, yes, that we are still in the early 40s, that's still what we're thinking about. So this is a very significant moment then, you know, in trying to reconceptualize what an Indian state would look like. And that's where the political aspect of the IPTA group became evident in the cinema. Yeah. So what we see now from the 40s to the 60s is known as the golden age of Indian cinema. And it was primarily because a lot of the films then started becoming, including romance and comedy and all the rest of that. And what we now see as Indian films, the genre was kind of perfected at that point of time, at that historical moment. So the masala film, so to speak, came about from the 40s to the 60s. It was developed. And then what happened is, in 1975, there was the release of Sholay. Now, I'm sure everybody has watched Sholay and knows of Sholay. It's a fantastic film. And why was it such a landmark film? In fact, if you know a little bit about the history of Sholay, when it was first released, there was nobody in the theater, just nobody. And then some songs were added and things were edited, and again it was released, and then it became a blockbuster. And why was this? Why did Sholay represent this big definitive moment in Indian cinema? And that is because, for the first time, Sholay introduced new editing techniques. Yes? So I'm going to show you briefly a clip from this very famous song in Sholay, Mehbooba, Mehbooba. You might know it already. And what I want you to focus on is how the camera moves with the actress, and also how the song is edited. Okay? So we're going to watch this. Just a few minutes. Just to give you a sense of what it looks like. So, did you see that clip? Did you see what was happening with the camera there? So, you see Helen, she's dancing, and that her body is being sliced into little parts, right? So there's a focus on her belly and the chain that she's wearing around it. Then there's a focus on her breast. Then there's a focus on her legs. And then she's moving across that space. And then did you notice another really interesting thing that's happening over there? It's that the men are watching her. So remember we talked about censorship and I said, oh, you couldn't really show a kiss on screen because of the censorship law. So these laws were very much in evidence even then. And so what they did very smartly is like, how do we create this as a sexual, sensual experience, right? All these gangsters are watching this woman perform. And how do we create that energy that they are lashing at her? How do we do that? So this is what they decided to do. They were like, instead of focusing only on her, the full body, let's focus on her little parts and see how her parts, how the camera's focus on the parts of her body enhances the pleasure for Gabbar Singh, who's sitting over there, and for his friend over there who's curling his mustaches, right? How each of them is watching Helen and they're watching parts of her body. So that's what the camera movement, that's what the editing did for the first time. And also, interestingly enough, it's the first time that we have this very layered film experience, right? So we are watching, we as the viewers are watching Helen, and then we are watching Helen being watched by Gabbar Singh. And then if you watch the clip a little more, Jay and Veeru are also there. They are watching Gabbar Singh watch Helen, right? So there are three multiple layers of viewership involved in this. And what happens then if there are so many layers of viewership? It makes it very exciting for you as a viewer, like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? Because the camera keeps shifting what we call point of view, right? So at one point you're seeing Helen, then you're seeing Gabbar, then you're seeing Jay and Veeru, and all of them have different stakes in what's happening at that moment, right? And as a viewer, you want to know, okay, what happens next? And if you remember the film, we know that then there's a bomb exploded, right? The Jay and Veeru explode this bomb. So this like very sensual, erotic scene between Helen and the gangsters, and then there's this bomb. So that's why this film became really, really popular and really became what we call a landmark film, right? And so after this film, there were a lot of different films which were all in the angry young man genre, which you might know and be familiar with. So there's Zanjeer and there's Deewar. And most of these films starred Amitabh Bachchan, who became a super, super duper star. They were all focused on him and him fighting society and fighting the evils of society. So that became like a very popular genre. And what we would say is the 80s is perhaps the lowest point of Indian cinema. It's not that those films didn't make any money or didn't, you know, were all flop. There were some really, really famous films, then Mr. India, etc. But it wasn't really a period of innovation, right? Either in form or content or any of that. And then what we have is in the 1990s, we have the liberalization of the Indian economy. So what does that mean? In 1992, okay, that, you know, the Indian economy was liberalized. What that meant was that suddenly there was a lot of money coming in from NRIs who lived all across the world, in the UK, in Australia, in the US, and they were pouring money in. And they wanted to see films that represented their lives, right? And Indian filmmakers saw, oh my God, this is such a great market. Why haven't we thought of it before? Because there were economic sanctions and they couldn't think of that market before. And so now they were really eager to make films that were very popular in the West, right? Films that people in England are going to love and going to watch. And so first of these films, of many, many films, was Dilwale Dulhaniya Le Jayenge. And what that film did, which was really interesting, is that it bridged both the UK diasporic audience and the Indian audience. And how did it do this? Because the first half of the film, if you know, is set in the UK and it's actually set in all over Europe, right? So the entire European diaspora, and you get to see it, and the Indian viewer is very happy because he gets, for 60 rupees, gets to travel to, you know, London and Paris and all these Netherlands and all these wonderful places just sitting in the seat for 60 rupees. And then the second half of the film is all set in India. And now the Indian viewer is also very happy because he gets to see the traditional Indian family drama, right? And the UK viewer is happy because for the first time, she's being represented on screen and her problems and her life and her questions are now the subject of the cinema, right? And so that was one of the big reasons why it became such a huge hit. And then after that, what we call are the films of the new Bollywood. That's the name for that. for the films that released then. And you might remember many of them, Salaam Namaste, Dostana. And why I'm citing these particular films is for the first time they tackled subjects that were very taboo in Indian society. So, for example, Kal Ho Na Ho talks about divorce, right? Salaam Namaste talks about living relationships. Dostana talks about homosexuality. Not that they had a very progressive stance on some of these issues, but the fact is that they talked about these issues. They made them the subject of Indian cinema, right? And that was a radical change from how Indian cinema had been going all this time, because so far, Indian cinema was fine. It's primarily concerned with happy marriage. At the end of the film, everyone's happy, the families are happy, and that's the end of that, right? They didn't want to tackle anything that was slightly difficult or problematic or talk about sexual relationships at all. So that was the difference. And in 2010, this is my, this is what I've theorized, and my next book project is actually on this. 2010, we again see a change, a shift in cinema. And what this change is that filmmakers are returning again to the local, to what has been popular for all this time, but not in the classes, but in the masses. So they go back to the villages and they make these films again, right? So you see Ishqiya, for example. It's a film set in a village and it's using Bhojpuri, and you don't really understand everything that's going on in the film, but it's still a really exciting film, yeah? And then most famous of these, of course, is Anurag Kashyap's Gang of Wasseypur, yeah? And what they did is they shifted away the focus of the film from the urban centers to the rural, to the towns, to the small towns, and they tried to capture the very nuances of the small town, yeah? And these films have been commercially successful. Why? Because a lot of people in the small towns for once saw themselves represented on screen. And so that was an exciting moment for them. And the small towns, you know, they had more purchasing power too, right? So these films, in fact, are really interesting because they straddle what we could call commercial cinema and art cinema, right? A lot of these films you could think of as art films. So, I mean, of course, they have songs and dances and all the rest of that. But they still have, they still are different from the out-and-out commercial entertainment. Yeah? And so, this brings us to the second topic in today's discussion, which has to do with parallel cinema. And I'm going to talk very briefly about that, because I don't know, we don't have that much more time. So, just a brief overview. So this movement started in the 70s, and it was to counter mainstream Bollywood. And a lot of the filmmakers thought that Bollywood wasn't really tackling the most important social issues of the time, and that these issues needed to be talked about, right? So, for example, the film Ankur, Shyam Benegal's film, it's about caste relationships and the exploitation of a poor, lower caste woman by her landlord, right? And the ways in which she's oppressed by her caste, by her social, by her social status, by her economic status, by her gender, all of these things. And that was a really powerful, hard-hitting film, right? But it didn't have songs and dances, it wasn't for everybody, it wasn't entertaining, it wasn't a comedy, it had a really strong social message. And so, another film, very important film, like Aparna Sen, and this is, it is to be noted that parallel cinema did offer women opportunities to make films, which was not really the case in mainstream Bollywood films, and this was because parallel cinema didn't have, the budgets were not that big, so women filmmakers had a chance to make films that were socially important to them, right? So, for example, Aparna Sen makes Parama, which is a film about a woman who is unfaithful to her husband, and her husband doesn't treat her well, and she falls in love with a photographer, and, you know, she chooses to live that life, and finally she lives a life without either of those men. She realizes she doesn't need a man in her life. And it was a really radical film, if you think about it. A film like this, talking about divorce and marriage and all of the and infidelity, I mean, it's a radical subject at any point of time, right? And it was a really important feminist landmark. And if you think of Parama, we see that Parama actually has its predecessor and can be actually read in parallel with one of Satyajit Ray's very famous films. You might all know the Appu trilogy, and of course he's very famous for that. But I'm talking here about Charulata. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because, again, it's a film, it's a very early film, but it talks a lot about women's frustration with being confined in the house and within this domestic role, right? It's a black and white film, but still it is so engaged with what we call as the woman's question. What is woman's role in society? And what Satyajit Ray did is he was very, very committed that the form of a film would follow the content, right? So I'm going to show a very brief clip now, but in that clip, you're going to see the boredom of the female protagonist. And that's going to be shown through long takes and long spans and just wandering around that doesn't lead anywhere. So without further ado, let me show you, let's watch the clip. Yeah? So did you see that clip? Did you see what happened over there? There was nothing happening and you're wondering, what is going on over here? Why is this woman just hanging around? And that's the point, right? She is bored and you are bored watching her, and that's the point, right? You are supposed to be bored. And that's why nothing happens. She goes, she looks at a book, she picks it up, then she wanders around, and then the camera slowly, slowly, slowly focuses on her back walking away from us. That isn't very exciting. Where's the song and dance? Where is all of that? The Chatterjee Ray had a point to make, and that is that women's lives, if you confine within the home, if you confine women within the home and you don't allow them to have their own life, they are racked by boredom, especially an intelligent, brilliant woman like Charulata, who's a poet and who writes her own poetry and is, you know, wants to be known by the world and wants her husband to recognize her. He's the radical soul for this moment. And what we see about Chatterjee Ray is that he's very influenced by Italian neorealism. So what does that mean? It means that he wants the environment and the people to, and the story to dictate the camera form, right? And to dictate the form of the film. So he wants to simplify the film so you're focused mainly on the people and on the story, and that the camera is really going to give you an impression or a sense of what the story is saying, right? So the camera, in fact, it expresses the moods of the people, which is very different from how editing and camera techniques work in commercial indie films, right? The commercial indie film does not want you to be bored for 15 minutes. The sequence, by the way, goes on for the first 15 minutes of the film. You are bored. You're bored watching her, she is bored, yeah? So I hope that gives you a little bit of sense of this kind of cinema and how invested it was in exploring the emotional depth of human nature. Yeah? So it wasn't just about a social message even, but really wanted to understand how can cinema be a vehicle for talking about the most important and universal human experiences, suffering and pleasure and pain and all the rest of that. So just to wrap up in the final segment of this class, we know that we've talked about quite a few things, and it might be a lot to digest at this moment. But just to give you a brief overview, we talked a little bit about Bollywood cinema and how it got its name and how it became a very prominent film industry. And then we went over a brief overview of the history of the cinema and focused on Sholay and how that became such a decisive moment. And we saw how interruptions, the theory of interruptions, actually works in Sholay, right? So we saw the editing techniques and the censorship at play and also the climax and all the rest of that, and how Sholay became actually the film for seeing the interruptions. And then we move on to the 90s and the, you know, the new subject matters of these films and, you know, and how that changed in the 2000s and 2010 especially, and became more focused again on the local. And then we move briefly to talk about parallel cinema, and actually there's a lot more to be said about parallel cinema, and I encourage you all to go out and watch some of these films, wonderful films, they're all available online. So yes, I hope you enjoyed the lecture.
Okay, thank you so much, Professor Chandria. That was actually a very, very interesting lecture. We learned a lot from you. You taught us how to dissect different camera angles and showed us things that we'd never really been exposed to before. So thank you so much. I'm just going to move to a few questions that we have received from various audiences. So to start with, is it possible for you to give us a sense of the current trends in Indian cinema? Any current younger generation filmmakers that you personally consider trendsetters, and what are some of the trends they are actually trying to establish?
Yes, certainly. So I definitely think that Indian cinema is interestingly moved again to thinking and talking about powerful women, which is a really, really great thing. And so if you see Siku, which is a mainstream film, but it's still talking about an important, it's talking about a woman, right, and a woman's sexuality. And that's so different. It's not really been discussed before, and it's not like women never had any sexuality, but it's not that they were really the subject of cinema. Yeah. And so I think that's a really important film, and I definitely think that Abhishek Chaubey is making some really excellent films. And if you see Dev Ishqia, it's set in a small town, but it talks about a lesbian relationship between a Begum and her servant, right? And it's really radical, and it's based actually on Ismat Chughtai's short story, Lihaf. So that's another amazing film, too. Again, talking about women's sexuality and women's desires and how they live in a male-dominated world. So yeah, I think these are some of the great filmmakers, Debakar Banerjee, Anurag Kashyap, Vishal Bhardwaj, Abhishek Chaubey.
So getting back to the film you described earlier, the Sholay and the Mother India, was that a time when you could describe overall changes, systemic shifts in the country as a whole? Because as we progress over time, we see systemic shifts in the definition of India as a nation, with so many countries literally within one country. So is there a change in the way filmmakers are now dissecting the country and say, okay, let's focus on women's issues because women overall is one larger genre as opposed to rural, semi-rural, urban, super urban. Is there a different definition of how they're approaching segmentation of the country or not really?
Yes, absolutely. So if you see a film like Mother India, that was supposed to represent, Nargis was supposed to represent every Indian woman and every Indian woman who was a peasant toiling away in the fields, right? It didn't, she wasn't located in a specific village. I mean, of course, there was a specific village, a fictional one, but that was supposed to represent every village in India, right? The south, the north, the east, the west. And that was to be the, you know, that was supposed to be the nation. The village was supposed to be a metaphor for the nation. And now we see a film like, say, Dev Ishqia, which I mentioned before. And it's very specifically located in Mahmoodabad, right? And you have the little gangsters of Mahmoodabad who are not supposed to represent anything but what they are. They are these little small-time politicians trying to get their way into getting some political legitimacy by marrying Begum Para, right? Right. So it's very specific. And Gangs of Wasipur is set in Wasipur, yeah, and it's based on historical events. I mean, not accurately, but roughly speaking. And so it's invested in the feudal politics of that small, you know, that small state, that small town in India. It's not trying to say, oh, this is the nation. No, it isn't.
Since we have you and you've had this vast exposure to Indian cinema, both the parallel movement as well as mainstream commercial cinema, would you please share with us any three of your like favorite films or filmmakers and what makes them special to you personally?
So I think today's lecture actually focused on a lot of my favorites just because I wanted to talk about them. So and I thought, why not? So I definitely love Aparna Sen, and she's done a fantastic work. I mean, it's hard to find another woman filmmaker who has been so prolific in her output. And so she's definitely a person who I admire. And actually, now as we see, more women are making films, so they may be documentaries. There are not that many in commercial cinema. We do have Duya Akhtar and Reema Khatri, but they're not really making the kind of commercial films specifically focused on women. But Aparna Sen is a really good example of a woman filmmaker. I think it's really important that we watch the film. So that's one. And then I would say definitely Satyajit Ray, and I think he's a favorite for many people. And it's because he really has a sensitivity to human nature, as I mentioned earlier. And I would say the commercial filmmaker, Vishal Bhardwaj, for sure. I mean, Heather is a work of art.
Okay, and you know, since you have this historical context to cinema and you study sort of the evolution of Indian cinema, starting with the first Loki, where do you foresee Indian cinema going? Do you have some sense or intuition even of the future of Indian cinema?
So I have a feeling that Indian cinema is going to become many different things in the next couple of years, and one of those things are going to be the more artistic but still commercial films like Gangs of Wasseypur, and the other part, and you know, Dibakar Banerjee's Detective Bhogesh Bakshi. I mean, it's a commercial film, but it is so beautifully done. I mean, it's aesthetically very pleasing, right? So I think that's really where it's going to become this hybrid thing. And still, of course, we have our blockbusters, and you know, those are still going to go to packed cinema audiences like Dil Dhadakne To and all the others. But they also really have these other films which are more thoughtful, slightly more, you know, aesthetically, how shall I say, contrived. So, yeah.
Okay. And as you know, we run an educational business. So for some of the students who are actually considering film studies as a subject, I'm just going to ask you one or two questions for the benefit of them. Firstly, any books, resources, guides, anything that you recommend as resources that you have personally referred to or that you recommend to your students as sort of must-read fundamental building blocks for the study of Indian cinema, if you could share some of those, please.
Yes, definitely. So as I mentioned before, The Theory of Interruption comes from a very famous film theorist, Lalita Gopalan, and she has a book called Cinema of Interruption. And I really, really recommend to pick up that book just to understand how Indian cinema is framed and how it is so, so different from Hollywood, right? And I think that's a wonderful primer to that. And it gives you a bit of film theory and it gives you a bit of history, and it also looks at specific films.
Okay. And any other websites or resources or other books that you suggest or any other courses that you might recommend that students take?
There are many. And also the thing is that Indian films are a relatively new academic area of study, only as of the past 10 or 15 years. So there haven't been that many books. So there are a lot of essays online, and I'd be happy to share some of those titles with you or links, send the links to your students that might, you know, help them. So Sangeeta Gopal has another great book called Conjugations, which is actually about all the, you know, Dilwale Dulhaniya Le Jayenge, that phase of the new Bollywood film. So that's another great one.
Okay. And just the final question before we close this evening session, just to draw some parallel, the inevitable Hollywood-Bollywood question. So any parallel you see between Indian cinema, either historically or futuristically, and Hollywood. So any sort of trends, parallels, comparisons and contrasts that you might want to illustrate for people watching?
So here's what I think about Hollywood, and this is also a sad part of Hollywood for me. It's that it tries, and it's so focused on genre, so that it really loses out on a full-fledged, a full-body film, right? So the romantic comedy is only supposed to entertain women, right? So it will have lots of glossy women roaming around in high heels, and it will have a lot of, you know, comedic dialogues and a little bit of fun. But it doesn't really have any social message, for example, or it doesn't have any higher purpose. It's just a romantic comedy supposed to entertain. Similarly, like Jurassic World, it's just supposed to be, you know, you go sit with your kids in the theater, and you all get scared of the dinosaurs eating you, right? So this is one of the fundamental limitations of Hollywood, I think, is genre. And that the fact that it is so, that the market is so segmented into genres and into, you know, specific target audiences, it kind of limited the cinema. But I definitely find that American independent films are really different and great and worth watching. And there are a lot of, you know, very different kinds of films being made, and internationally as well, you know, there are films that are outside the commercial film industry, which really try and, you know, investigate different things, different aspects of life.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for sharing your time and more so your knowledge with our students. And we really appreciate you taking the time in New York to get on this Google Hangout with us. I'm sure all our students would like to thank you as well. And for the students watching, if you have any more questions or follow-up questions to ask Professor Shania, you can email them. And if there are any other topics or discussion topics that you'd like us to bring in experts on, please send us an email at help@reachiv.com and we will try our best to find you an area expert in that as well. Thank you, Professor Shamila. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. Yeah.